Patel as well. Okay, Mr. The next case is Fast versus Barnard. Mr. Shaw.
May it please the court, I'm Joseph W. Shaw. I'm representing Ms. Fast in a Social Security case. This case presents an issue of law as how adverse vocational factors, in this case particularly age, affect an individual and how that's how you determine whether a person is disabled using the grids as a framework when the individual has only non-exertional limitations, that is, other than sitting, standing, walking, lifting, carrying. This case,
can I just ask you, I take it you are not actually contesting the underlying vocational expert testimony that there's some 16,000 or so, 16,000-17,000 jobs.
I am not, Judge.
So we take it as a fact in this case that there is this finding, that she's capable of performing that number of jobs.
Yes, that's correct, Judge. She
is.
Why
isn't that the end of the case? I mean, we see cases all the time where a more precise factual finding is made of the number of jobs in the general economy a person could do at step five, and if it's a significant number, which this is well above what's been found in many cases, that's the end of it. The grids have their function, but as you correctly point out, the grids don't apply when the only limitations are non-exertional. You need more, and we have more here.
Yes, Judge. The issue here is that you go not just on the functional limitations of an individual, physical or mental, but you also have to consider what are called vocational factors.
But what if the VE had found that there were 100,000 jobs that she could do? I take it that still somehow doesn't satisfy your
No, I would not be here if there were 100,000 jobs.
Well, so what's wrong with 16 or 17,000 jobs? Why is that such a number that we should do this strange extra comparison that you want us to do?
Well, it is significant because an individual under the grids of the same age, education, and work experience as the claimant would be disabled.
But not
being able to do even more jobs than that. So the issue is
sedentary, though, but she wasn't limited exertionally.
That's correct. But
okay,
then
so you're making an apples and oranges comparison.
Right. That was my question, too,
yeah.
Whether or not your numbers are really comparable. Because, in other words, how would you respond to the government's contention that 85% of the jobs in the sedentary occupational base occur in the machine trades and bench work? And for that reason, a person that's limited with her age, education, and work experience would be considered unable to make the work adjustment and thus be, disabled. I mean, that's a very different situation than this case where the base of jobs identified by the vocational expert are jobs that are both within her residual functional capacity and are jobs that she would be expected to adjust to, given her, age, her education, her work experience.
The reason for that, Judge, is that the vocational factors, in this case age, is an adverse factor for her.
Aren't you really making an indirect attack on the RFC determination? Mental illness is always tricky, of course, and she has non-exertional mental impairments, and that, in the normal case, is part of the RFC determination. What is her, if somebody's completely disabled by mental illness, then they have no residual functional capacity to work. If they have controllable mental illness through medication or through structuring of a job properly and the like, then there's a little more. But it seems to me, instead of attacking RFC, which is something one might do in such a case, you have this other grid theory.
Yes, I am not, you're correct, Judge, I am not attacking RFC. It's not a backdoor attack on the RFC. But remember, this individual, if she could do sedentary work, okay, and she could do no more than that from a physical standpoint, she would be disabled if she can do all these 18,000 some jobs.
Of course, if you can do more than sedentary work, then you can do more. I mean, and you're not challenging the 16,000 number.
No, I'm not, Judge. But you have to factor in the vocational factors. They're not like the physical or mental factors. The vocational expert cannot say that this person cannot make an adjustment to other work because of her age. That is something that is a legislative fact. The government has decided that an individual, based on their age, is unable to adjust to these other work, even though they are physically capable of doing this work. And is what I'm...
And the government, actually, I have to say, as my own age advances, has interesting lines for when somebody is of advanced age.
Yes, yes. Judge, if you look at when they promulgated the regulations, Social Security did talk about age as an adverse factor. And is what they looked at is they said, okay, we look at the employment data and we look at that and we analyze that. And we know that at some point a person's age is an adverse factor in whether or not they can adjust to work if they can't do their past work anymore. Now, unfortunately, the government says that there is no specific information on exactly where that point is. We can't relate it specifically to limitations or necessarily a specific age, but we're going to draw some lines. We think at 55, it's definitely an adverse factor from what we look at. And also at 50, it can be an adverse factor, and at 45, it could be an adverse factor. It doesn't go any lower than that.
Let me ask you a bottom line question,
yes,
please. Aren't you really asking us to compare a base that does not take into account vocational factors with one that has already considered those factors? Isn't that sort of the bottom line?
No, Judge. In this case, the vocational factor of age has not been taken into account. It's taken into account through the grids. And in the grids, the grids say that an individual, even though of the same person's age, education, work experience as my client, even though they can functionally perform all of these jobs, this person is still disabled because they cannot make an adjustment to this work because of their age. That's an adverse factor. And what I'm saying is you have to figure in a person with a mental condition, you also have to figure in whether or not this individual, the adverse effect of age on this individual. And this cannot be done by the vocational expert testifying, but you have to go to the legislative facts that have been legislated under the grid. And 8515, which applies to severe mental impairment, sets out that one of the things you must look at besides the occupation.
Has anybody ever made this argument before?
As from reading the cases, no, I do not. I believe this is an argument of first impression, Judge.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Shaw. We know what it is. Ms. Ahmed?
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Mona Ahmed, representing the Commissioner of Social Security. I think that the panel has already hit on some of the key issues in this case. We're considering a legal issue here. That legal issue is whether or not work exists in significant numbers, either in the region where Ms. Fast lives or in several regions of the country. That's the statutory standard for disability under the Social Security Act. And one of the considerations that we take into account when we figure out whether or not work exists in significant numbers are these vocational factors, age, education, and work experience.
But what evidence is there that the ALJ gave consideration to the guidelines in this case?
Well, the ALJ, in the findings of the ALJ's decision, which can be found pages 22 and 23 of the administrative record. The ALJ's findings reflect that the ALJ looked at the grid rule that was appropriate for a person who has only non-exertional limitations. And that appropriate grid rule is Rule 204.00. It's not, as Ms. Fast claimed, 201 point something, because the 201 grid table is only appropriate for people who are limited exertionally to sedentary work. That's not Ms. Fast. Ms. Fast is a very different person with a very different occupational base. Her occupational base is reflected in Rule 204.00. It spans the entire level of exertion from sedentary through very heavy. And it's a much different type of occupational base. And that's why when a person has solely non-exertional limitations, that's why an ALJ looks to a vocational expert. This court said long ago in the DeFrancesco case that the grid abounds in gaps, and the way to fill in those gaps is through vocational expert testimony. That's exactly what the ALJ did here. It's what ALJs have been doing for the last 25 years since the grid was promulgated, and it's what courts have affirmed for the last 25 years. And so there's really, you know, this question has been answered, and Ms. Fast concedes that there are 16,000 jobs that are appropriate for her vocationally and functionally. The hypothetical question that was posed in this case to the vocational expert specifically included her adverse vocational factor. The only adverse vocational factor was her advancing age in this case. Ms. Fast is a woman who is highly educated. She has 2 master's degrees and a post-master's degree, and she's a person with very skilled work experience. And if she were limited, if she had a different kind of impairment, a physical impairment that limited her to sedentary work, she may well have been able to do her past work and then probably wouldn't have even come under the grid. Or she may well have had transferable skills, in which case a different rule would direct a conclusion of not disabled. And so that's why the grid really does not apply in this case. What applies in this case is the vocational expert testimony. That testimony is not disputed. Ms. Fast concedes that she can do 16,000 jobs or more. Given that evidence that's not disputed, and given what this court said in DeFrancesco and what this court said in Lee and what numerous other courts across the country have said, there's no reason to find that there's any reason to reverse the commissioner's decision in this case. There's no legal error here.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Thomas. Mr. Schell, do you have anything more?
The vocational expert can supply the adjudicative fact, which is the age, education, and work experience of the claimant, but the vocational expert cannot supply the legislative facts in this case, and that is the comparison of the occupational base. Second, I'd like the court to check, and we did cite the POMS, which discusses specifically how these cases are to be decided, and that's POMS 25025.001.001B4. And in this case, it specifically sets out what the appellant has contended, that it's first necessary to approximate the size of the remaining occupational bases at all exertional levels, then it's necessary to compare their approximate occupational base to the number of occupations represented by Appendix 2 tables, to determine the appropriate table to be used, and third, the rules in the table.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schell. Your time is expired. Next case for argument is,